Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, my friends, wherever you are in the world. It's a pleasure to be with you here today with my friends, Daryl and Ed. We're going to be talking about Microsoft Project. We're going to be talking about scheduling. So it's a pleasure to be here. My name's Phil, and I'll be your friend, your co-host, going through this journey of scheduling with my other project managers who are going to be joining the call. I'm a project management professional. I've been certified as a PMP for 18 years now, but I have a history that predates PMP, and that's in Microsoft Project. So it's a topic that's very near and dear to my heart, and that's why I decided to work with our friends here to bring this to you. We're very passionate about our craft as project managers, and we realize that there are a lot of people out there that manage schedules, but there's often a trepidation about Microsoft Project. People don't want to go there. People think it's too big and it's ominous and it's unwieldy, but that's not really the truth. As you're going to find out today, by the time we're done, you're going to see the simplicity of Microsoft Project. It's all about scaling it. So that's my intro. Daryl, want to introduce yourself?
Absolutely, Phil. Well, my name is Daryl Mesa, and I am a senior program planner and scheduler. I specialize in planning and scheduling. Also in earned value management. I currently work for the government sector as a program planner and scheduler, former Marine, and I'm happy to be here and support Phil in any way, and also Ed as well. Hand it off to you, Phil.
Thank you, Daryl. Ed, you want to introduce yourself real quick?
Yes, my name is Edward Koch Jr., but I go by ED for all you smart and intelligent folks out there. That's just Ed, okay? I have a background in project management with a PMP, a CAPM, also a master's in project management, and I'm studying for one of the greatest, I believe, to do it in project management, which is Phil. At the same time, I'm accompanied by a really great friend here that we met along the way in a great journey. So when you get together with like-minded individuals, you can see the power of just wanting to grow and learn from each other. So today, this is going to be an amazing event. I hope everyone can tune in. And if you didn't get a chance to tune in, please make sure you get a chance to watch this. I really believe this is history in the making. You got three great minds here. We're very humble, even though we have the credentials to back up what we're saying. We're just not talking it. We're actually living the life of a true, this thing we call project management. Back over to you, Phil.
Thank you, Ed. Thank you very much. Let's jump straight into our quick discussion to kind of set the tone and the pace for what is to come. In the world of project management, we have 10 areas of knowledge. You might be aware of the book called The PMBOK Guide. This is really a cut from chapter 6, where we talk about scheduling. Project schedule management is all about managing the processes that help the timely completion of the project. And I want to go over these really quick with you to set the pace and the tone for what's to come. So number one, if you want a great output from scheduling, you have to first plan. And we call this plan schedule management. You need to decide how to manage your schedule. You don't just start scheduling in any old tool, in any old way, with any old person. You actually should plan. So you ask, which processes are we going to use to schedule? How do we know we're accurate? What is our threshold, our tolerance level for the schedule? At what point do we become concerned? There's an index in project management. We call it a schedule performance index. Now, when I was in an aerospace company, we had a schedule index that the moment you hit below that index, it needs to be looked at under the microscope. In other words, you're going to be called into a dim lit room to give an update as to why your schedule is how it is. I say that in jest, but unfortunately, in a lot of companies, schedules run wild. There are no thresholds. There's no measurements. But in the world of the Project Management Institute, we're very particular about this, about schedules being held to a standard. Number two, we define activities, and this is listing out all the things that needs to be done. Then we sequence the activities. We have a number of relationship types in the world of scheduling. We have start to start, finish to finish, start to finish and finish to start. The most popular, the most common in scheduling is finish to start, which means I must finish A before I can start B. We also have I can start A, and the moment I start A, then B can start. Or I cannot finish B until A is finished. That's finish to finish. The one that's least commonly used is the start to finish, which means the night shift person must start before the day shift person finishes. It's used a lot in scheduling in hospitals and night guard positions and things like that. The fourth thing is estimating activity durations. And this is where you put on your thinking cap with a team. You might be looking at historical information to get an analogous estimate to understand, based on the past, what do I think this activity will take? How long? So we do that. We estimate durations for each activity. And when you have that, you know, I know I've made it sound very simple, but you could have analogous estimates. You could have definitive estimates, which are more precise. So in an agile world, we go by estimating in an incremental manner, right? But we don't estimate the duration the way we do in the world of predictive. In the world of agile, we have a time box and we know what can be done in the time box. So it takes away the need for heavy scheduling, right? So let's get it straight. It's not as though we don't think about durations in agile. We just do it differently. So in this world of predictive or hybrid, if you will, we estimate the durations, and once we have all those components, boom, we get our schedule, because we're going to take the activities, we're going to take the sequence information, we're going to take the concept of Slack flow, leads and lags, we're going to take all of those durations, and we're also going to factor in, even though we're not going to go deep into it tonight, but you also need to factor in the resources, because durations are contingent on the people you assign. The more skill the resource, in some instances, the less time it takes. The more perfectionist-oriented the resource, the longer it takes. So you got to look at a number of parameters, jokes apart. But when you get all that information, you put it all together, you got your schedule. Now, here's the final thing that a lot of project managers do not remember to do. They didn't get the memo. The memo is to control the schedule. I hope my former boss isn't watching, because my former boss said, Phil, that schedule, we actually did it because of a stakeholder in the back office. Just put it on the wall so that when he goes past, he'll see the schedule and he'll be happy. What? Are you kidding? That schedule is meant to be controlling the project. You can't tell me just slap it on the wall. Hey, I'm a project manager. I need to hold the team accountable, right? Or the team needs to hold itself accountable from a more agile perspective, right? So when you get a schedule, don't just keep it. Use the schedule to inspire, to motivate, to lead, to drive to completion. I didn't say to coerce. I'm not saying carrot and sticks. No. It's just a good reminder of what is to come. And that's what we do as project managers. Okay, so that's all from me. At this point, I'm going to ask my buddy Daryl to go ahead and expand on what we've started.
Thank you so much, Phil. So the reason why I wanted to get with the both of you is to ensure that we as project managers always remember the fundamentals of project management. And we use software tools like Microsoft Project to control the schedule or even develop the schedule if we do backwards planning. I wanted to show everybody here how important is Microsoft Project. It is today, especially in this fast-paced world where AI is becoming number one in almost every system that we ever have to touch in some way. Before you know it, it's going to be in every car and every software that we have. And it's very important to understand that the fundamentals of Microsoft Project Professional is very important to remember and have under your tool belt. So whether you're a seasoned professional or just starting out, mastering Microsoft Project is very essential in this field. With its powerful tools and user-friendly interface, MSP makes it easy to plan, manage, and track projects of all sizes and and complexities. Like I said, in today's fast-paced business world, AI is in the forefront of almost every industry, including project management. So by using Microsoft Project Professional, it can streamline your processes and optimize your resources, meaning people, also materials. And you can ensure that your projects are completed on time, within budget, and to the satisfaction of all stakeholders. Now, remember, Microsoft Project is not a Microsoft Excel alternative. However, I can speak for myself, but not to the project management professionals out there or in the industry. I tend to use Microsoft Project as an Excel spreadsheet. And by applying these basic tools, like what Phil suggested as far as the PMBOK guide and the schedule management plan, that will help me understand that Microsoft Project is not like Excel. It's a total different software tool, specifically trained for Microsoft Project and project schedules, mainly for Chapter 6 in the PMBOK guide. Now, before we move on, I wanted to ask Ed or Phil, are there any insights of what we just talked about?
Yeah, you know, I appreciate that, Daryl. I do have an insight. You know what bothers me, gentlemen? Let me tell you. I mean, I probably shouldn't say this, but since we're live, we can't go back now, Phil. I don't like when someone says, let me see your project management plan. And I don't know what that means, because when I think of a project management plan, I think of the 10 knowledge areas. When I think of a project management plan, I also think that encompasses the 49 processes. Okay, you get where I'm going, but...
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
I hear that a lot, especially even from my own project managers, and we have to correct that. We are the gatekeepers when it comes to that. Those are the things we can control, and we have to distinguish the difference between what a project schedule is and what a project management plan is. And a schedule, it consists of tasks, milestones. So that is a schedule. A plan is the thing, the 10 knowledge areas that you're working out of. So when we challenge you here today, we're not having you come here just so we can give you jargon that same industry people keep telling you that is not accurate, like get your PMP in 6 days and 4 hours. We're talking about scheduling and project management plan, but today is the project schedule. Over to you, Phil.
Thank you, Ed. That is one of my pet peeves. Let's keep it 100, right? Let's make it clear that the project schedule is called that. It is not a project plan. A project plan, as Ed said, is much more robust. But let me get off my soapbox. Daryl?
Now, to maybe shed more light into the project plan and a project schedule, would you gentlemen be able to elaborate more on the differences between those two?
Absolutely. Thank you for asking, Daryl. So to do this, I want to paint a very solid picture of the components of the project management plan, because this misnomer, it goes far beyond the team. I see even higher level executives saying project plan. So we should probably correct it once and for all, right? So let's share a more vivid example so that people understand what we're talking about. So I'd like to bring in a visual of a project management plan array. The project management plan contains subsidiary plans and baselines. In the world of integration management, there are a number of plans that we derive. The first one being the change management plan that goes into how to manage changes on the project. Then we have a configuration management plan which governs change as far as artifacts and deliverables, widgets, drawings, for example, for those of you in construction. In the world of scope, we have a scope management plan and we have a requirements management plan. We also have a scope baseline, which contains a trifecta of the WBS, the WBS dictionary, and the project scope statement. In the world of schedule, we have a schedule management plan and a schedule baseline. In the world of cost, we have a cost management plan and a cost baseline. Now, let's get it straight. What is the baseline? Baseline just means the original approved plan for that knowledge area. So for the scope baseline, it's the originally approved scope. When I say approved, I mean it is approved by management. I like a mnemonic from one of the greats of project management, Rita Mulcahy. She would say, your project plan has to be barfed. What did she mean by barfed? All she meant was bought into, approved, realistic, and formal. It's a kind of fun play on words. The problem in a lot of firms, they don't have a barfed anything. No barfed scope, no barfed schedule, no barfed cost. And that's why their projects go to the dogs a lot of times in the predictive realm. I hate to say it, but a lot of weak links, they go to Agile for the wrong reasons as a cop-out, because they're not able to manage their schedules and their budgets. So I want to challenge project managers, get your project management plan and your project schedule buffed. So right here on the screen, I'm just showing the trifecta that we call the triple constraints: schedule, cost, and scope. These three form what we call the iron triangle. And it's important that we understand the schedule right here, the schedule baseline. This is just one piece of the larger project management plan. The cost baseline is one piece of the larger project management plan. And I could go on and on. The quality aspect has a quality management plan. The resource aspect has a resource management plan. Communications has a communications management plan. Risk has a risk management plan. Procurement has a procurement management plan. Stakeholder has a stakeholder. The right word is engagement plan. And if you take a look at all of these together, we're talking about a project management plan. All of these put together, this formed the project management plan. But if you wanted to look under the hood at just one piece that we're talking about today, the one piece that we're talking about today would fall more around this realm of the schedule baseline. Now, for those of you PMBOK aficionados, because I know you're out there, I know you're watching, the PMBOK police, Daryl, Ed, I call them the PMBOK police. They'll say, but the schedule baseline isn't the schedule. And they're actually right. The schedule baseline is etched in stone. The project schedule is a living, breathing document that the project manager and the team have the responsibility to update. And this is how it works in the world of Agile as well. You know, like when we move things to being done, it's a way of tracking as well. Okay, so the key idea in this world is not only to have your baseline. Your baseline is great. It reminds me of that manager I was talking about. And he said, Phil, just put the schedule up on the wall. He wanted the baseline, but he didn't want the responsibilities of updating the schedule. And a lot of people, they run away from updating the schedule. And as our friend Daryl and Ed will soon break down, you'll see that it's not that laborious a task. It's not that laborious if you have a method to it. But going back to what we're saying, this is a project management plan that you see on the screen over here, right? This is a project management plan, the entire collection, but the schedule is one piece of it. Now you may ask, but Phil, you mentioned project schedule. Why don't we see it inside this silo? The reason is we look at the project schedule as being a living, breathing organism. And as a project manager, you do not need permission to change what is in the schedule. Or I should say update what is in the schedule. To change the baseline, oh yes, you do need permission. But to update your schedule with actuals, you don't need any permission. That's your job as a project manager. Daryl, over to you.
Phil, so it sounds like you are saying that all those items that you just mentioned are connected to project scheduling in some way, in some fashion.
Brilliant point, Daryl. Absolutely. So it's like, what comes first, chicken or the egg? You have your project charter. What comes first in your project charter? High level everything, high level scope, high level assumptions. Right? Yeah. So you get your high level milestone schedule, and that's what's going to be fleshed out into a more detailed schedule. But don't forget, you also need to understand scope before your schedule can be finalized. You also need to understand the implication of hiring the most expensive resource. Ed, you got to hire the most expensive resource. So you got to take that into account, right? But when you have the most expensive resource, you know he's going to get the job done efficiently and on time, right? And then you've got quality. You also don't want quality to diminish. So I got to call my buddy Daryl in to manage the schedule, right? So you got to look at resources. You got to look at costs. You got to look at quality. You got to look at stakeholders. Sometimes stakeholders want a particular resource. And for that reason, your schedule is what it is. It's connected to all of those other knowledge areas that we looked at.
So Phil and Ed, I have a question. And I, during my PMP journey, in regards to getting my PMP credential, I was always told that communication is 90% project management, or in regards to soft skills or hard skills, or however you call it. Do you think communication is one of the pinnacles or key to having a successful project schedule?
Daryl, I think it definitely is. Actually, in the process of putting a book together around the reason why communication is the number one reason of having success in a project. But we also got to keep in mind the number two, in my opinion, subjective, of course, is collaboration. What I've known and I've seen in the past and even in my current is that sometimes project managers will go in their little silo and build the schedule out instead of working with their stakeholders to build out the schedule. Now I can see if you work with your stakeholders to get all the data and everything, you know, like collecting requirements and things like that, then you go back, formulate it, and then come back and then work, you know, diligently between the two. However, what tends to happen, I see it more than I like to see it, is that project managers go into that, like I said, silo and work on it and then come up with these dates and these timelines, and they're trying to appease leadership, but they can't really truly appease them because of the fact they don't really have the true data, because you don't know. I mean, Phil brought it up. You have resource constraints that could come up. You also have cost constraints. I mean, let's just say just basically the iron triangle. And so with these pieces in play, you have to do, number one, you have to communicate. Number two, you got to have that strong collaboration. This is an example with us three here of collaboration.
Good deal, Ed. I got nothing else to add. You nailed it. Thank you.
Thank you, guys. So in regards to Microsoft Project, what we just mentioned is the backbone of the tool itself. One of my mentors always told me, never let the tool control you. You control the tool. And by having this knowledge areas under your tool belt, it will definitely help you in controlling the tool or Microsoft Project, or not even putting it in the perspective of having it as Microsoft Excel. Like I had that bad habit of doing, where I just copy and paste different formulas and so forth. But I'm really happy, Phil and Ed, it really expressed the fundamentals and the backbone of project scheduling and using Microsoft Project itself. Phil, any insights?
I think you brought it all together, Daryl, just in your question that you asked. You got to look at all the knowledge areas. Otherwise, you're going to just be death by Microsoft Project. You're not going to understand how to maneuver the tool. Some of you are running away from Microsoft Project because you see all the bells and whistles. But I want you to liken it to your wardrobe. Those of you who are fashion oriented, you might have tons and tons of clothes. Maybe you're not even fashion oriented, but I would wager you've got at least 10 choices in your wardrobe, right? You don't go into your wardrobe every day wanting to use all the clothes and put all of them on. That would be ridiculous. You got to look in your wardrobe and say, what matches today? I'm going out to play golf. I'm going out to play tennis. I'm just going out to work. So you pick what is appropriate for the occasion and you wear it. That's the way Microsoft Project is. You look at what is appropriate for your 1 month, 2 months, 3 months, 6 months, 12 months, 5 year long rolling program, and you pick it from Microsoft Project and you use it. You don't have to do a 20,000 line schedule that is resource loaded. That's where people get lost. And people get scared. I'm going to say something that's going to offend people, and I really don't care because it's the truth. A lot of project managers scampering over to use Smartsheet because they don't want to do the heavy lifting, or they're scampering over to use Excel. I'm going to offend more people. Some of you, you know why you use the tools that you use, whether it's the Asanas, the ClickUps. I don't know what. Now, I'm not saying those tools are bad. Don't get me wrong. I love Smartsheet. I have Smartsheet all over my channels. I love it. But the reason I use Smartsheet is because it's a tool in the toolbox that may fit a situation. You get what I'm saying? I'm not running away from Microsoft Project. I am just using it because it's a tool that fits the job better. But a lot of PMs, they don't want to get into Microsoft Project. And I want to challenge you. Microsoft Project is the flagship scheduling tool. I don't care whatever else is out there, whether, you know, the Asanas of this world, the ClickUps of this world, you know, the homegrown tools of this world. I'm just keeping it 100. If you are a project management professional, why don't you know the tools of the trade, like the flagship? Come on now. I know some people are not happy with what I said, but I don't care because it's the truth. Go learn MS Project. Oh, I forgot. That's why you're here.
Come on now, Phil. I like that because it makes a good point. I mean, as a project management professional, you're consistently learning because one organization might use Smartsheets, another organization might use Asana, and you have to be able to jump in and use these tools. But as Phil stated, the flagship is definitely Microsoft Project, and we need to learn and be able to use that tool at any time, just like any of other tools. But most of all, Microsoft Project, I mean, to me, it's the premium of them all. But again, you need to be able to leverage everything. That's why you are a project management professional. Professional means you should be able to walk into any situation and be able to adapt and adjust and pivot as need be. Back over to you, Phil.
Absolutely. Thank you. I hand it over to Daryl. Daryl, let's get into some action. Come on now.
Awesome, guys. But before we actually do that, don't forget Primavera P6, guys. Both Microsoft Project and Primavera P6 are both the pinnacle tools that are behind the backbone of project management. You know, many project controls and earned value management that helped, like tools like Asana, Wrike, that's Smartsheets, true. You know, prosper in the scheduling business. So please, right. Special shout out to Oracle and Microsoft.
Shout out to P6, absolutely.
Yeah,
shout
definitely. P6. So as far as Microsoft Project, now we're gonna get into the details at a very simple level of Microsoft Project. So what you see here is the backbone of Microsoft Project. So think of it as a game, Xbox or PlayStation, you name it. In order for you to play a specific game, you have to go to the settings and use the settings to accommodate for yourself and how you want to control the player or the first-person shooter or the character itself. Same thing with the backbone of Microsoft Project. And the backbone of Microsoft Project is in the Options tab. Now, when you go into the Options tab, it gives you a specific tabs that will accommodate your likings or what you want to do to manipulate the project schedule for your project that you're trying to create or develop or plan and execute. Now we have several options here. We have the general tab, the display tab, schedule tab, proofing tab, the save tab, language tab, advanced tab, and so forth. Now, as a scheduler by trade, this is the main ingredient to always look back on in regards to starting using the tool itself. So I always practice to go into the project options and just understand the backbone of Microsoft Project, because it all depends on the project you're in. You may be in a government project where they have a specific calendar that you have to follow, or a specific view or Gantt view that you have to follow. So going into the project options will definitely help you in using Microsoft Project to the best of it's supposed to be. Phil, any insights? Ed?
Absolutely, Daryl, you're very correct. If you don't understand the backstage, what is going on in those options, you're going to be scratching your head quite a bit. So yeah, thanks for showing us this, Daryl. That's pivotal.
Absolutely, I agree. I was going to say thank you, Daryl, for starting with this piece, because a lot of times people just jump right into the tool and start putting in tasks and everything. So I appreciate you taking the time out to even go a little bit deeper with this piece here. So thank you.
No problem. And as far as key features of Microsoft Project Professional, there's a range of powerful features that you can actually utilize. But like I said, you always have to fine-tune the project options. The key features can help you create detailed project plans, which includes tasks, deadlines, and dependencies. It allows project managers like ourselves to visualize the entire project in a timeline and ensures that the team members are on the same page. So it can give you that visual of your project schedule with connecting your work breakdown structure, your project management plan, all the way down to your schedule management plan. So it's a very important feature to go into and manipulate to your project. So we're going to be going into the templates section, where we just create a simple template off the bat, just right out of the box. One thing about Microsoft Project, no matter what version it is, it has specific templates that you can actually use straight off the bat, where it can help you guide or even help you create that schedule. So what you see here, I picked the software development plan. It's mostly used or most common used in most industries. So we're going to be using that today. So I'll just hit create. And once I hit create, you're going to have this dashboard, or you're going to be directed to this tab called the task tab. Now, this is straight out of the box. There's no way of manipulating it or using some sort of macro to turn this off. Whenever you open a Microsoft Project and you use one of the templates, it will always come up with this type of dashboard. That's how I see it. So the first section in the dashboard is a timeline. Now, we're human beings, so we love visuals. We love colors. We love charts. So that's the reason Microsoft Project decided to put that as number one in the task tab, or the dashboard, or the Gantt chart is what we all call it. And then on the bottom, you have the specific details where you can put the tasks, the summary, and the subtasks, along with specific columns that you can actually track your project schedule. And then, of course, you have on the right side the Gantt chart itself, or the Gantt bar, as what we call it. So, Phil, any insights on this dashboard?
No insights right now, Dow.
All right.
It's looking good.
So one thing I wanted to ask, and maybe Ed can kindly participate. As far as what you see here, what would be the number one thing to do first once you open up this Microsoft Project Professional?
Well, I mean, as far as what to do first, you really have so many options depending on the project you're working on. As you know, Daryl, like this simple software development plan For some people, it could be a little bit intimidating because they don't even know software. So they wouldn't be here. They'd probably start off from ground zero without this template, if you get what I mean. So they may start off with a blank, just a blank sheet, and they may just start building one block at a time. So, I mean, why don't we show that, Daryl? Can we experiment for a second and show that?
Definitely.
Can we go to a blank sheet and let's begin building like a baby way? So let's, you know, I always use food as an example because everyone loves food. So let's do baking a cake. So let's put in 5 to 10 things that we do baking a cake, right?
So Phil, here's where I want to challenge the status quo. What you mentioned in the 10 minutes of our session, you know, as far as the project management plan, the scope management plan, the work breakdown structure, would you start off by getting insight on that to create your schedule in a blank, when this is presented as a blank form? Would you go back to that and say, okay, what's my scope? What's my requirements? What's my plan?
Exactly. So you need to first know what the charter is, what is in the charter, what exactly are we doing. When you have your project charter, then you can extract some further information from the charter as far as what needs to be done. But then you got to get into scope. So you got to get into building your, first of all, you need to have requirements, right? So there needs to be a requirements document of sorts. It works very different in the world of military projects versus civilian projects. But then you have my friends in the Army Corps. So they are military. They've got construction projects. But the way they manage those and the way they elaborate and expand on them may be different from, you know, little Bobby in the corner, a project coordinator in a software company, just building a very simple version 1.1 of a software application. But the bottom line is there has to be requirements. From requirements, because I always say requirements beget scope. You get your requirements. Then you understand the scope. Then from the scope, you begin to build. This is where we get to, because we have a WBS. I don't want to lose people, Daryl. I'm trying my best. But we have a work breakdown structure. The work breakdown structure needs to be broken down further into the activities, which is why, you know, we're going to start with something basic. But you're very correct in letting people know that there's a history before coming to Mike's project. Whatever you do, there should be a history of, what are we trying to do? The what, when, where, why, who, how, right? Correct. What are we building and all that stuff? Then working with a team, or maybe you're solo, it's okay. Maybe you're a solo person on the project. But the summary is you need to know enough scope before you begin to break down the schedule. And guess what? You're not done. There's more. After you begin iteration one, you're going to take a look at those durations and you're going to say, that ain't going to fly. And you have people on the team that will challenge it. And you go back and forth between resources, schedule, cost, scope. Let's cut out some of the scope so that we don't overshoot the milestone, the delivery date, and so on and so forth. So you're going back and forth. Communication, as you rightfully pointed out, Ed, we're going back and forth on all these things until we get to the point where we agree. So we want to make it very clear that it's not a one pass through the schedule. Typically, it's not. It could be when there's a lot of experience. For example, there's a project manager mentoring out of the West Coast. And he's like, Phil, I don't want to ever have to change this schedule. Let's spend all the time on it, because they're just building modular stuff. So once they build one, the same schedule, he's like, Phil, I just want to change the start date of the project. I don't want to change any of the dependencies. I want it to be in. So in cases like that, you might have a schedule that works perpetually for the kind of stuff you're doing. But going back to your point, Daryl, yes, we should first think about the overarching scope in the charter, then go into scope management. Then, you know, it could take a variety of turns. I've seen some instances where, you know, where management says, no, that schedule is too long. Make it shorter. Then you're trying to find, okay, trade-offs. Could we fast track some stuff? You know, but again, I don't want to lose folks, being that this is our first
rodeo. Oh, no. And this, I mean, it, honestly, Phil, this has to be said, because, you know, we're all human beings. And like we all said, once we open up a tool, we just want to go down to the details and start typing. True. But as an experienced project scheduler or even a controller in that capacity, I learned the hard way that you have to know what you're developing. You have to know your plan, because everything you put down here in this task name is a dollarized value of your work, no matter how you see it, you know, down to the highest level, to the lowest level, everything counts in regards to cost and resources. So I learned that the hard way. Nobody told me, hey, look at your WBS, look at your scope management plan. What are the requirements? I was always, you know, the norm was open a Microsoft project, build me a schedule. But however, there are history or specific items that you have to understand and know in order for you to build a project schedule, either in government or commercial.
Awesome, so, Daryl.
I hope it doesn't scare people away or intimidate people, because it has to be said, Phil.
Absolutely. And I just want to give a few shout outs before we go any further. So I want to give a shout out to Laura. Laura is one of my former students, and she just gave us a shout out there. Thank you, Laura, for attending. Richard, thank you for coming. Always a pleasure to see our friends. Oh, Robert from YouTube. Thank you, Robert. Robert is one of our viewers on YouTube out there. Richard, I'm very happy that you're here. Adiemi, thank you for coming as well. Thurman, good to see you. It's good to see all these friends of ours from the different platforms. And Delita, my esteemed PMP, also working on her ACP2. Good to see you here. Tosin, good to see you. Very good. And we got a few more chats from our friend Delita. Delita says, that's a good point. She says, understanding what I'm doing. I can't figure out how to use a tool, but why this is so good. Absolutely. She says, and not knowing why is a reason why I've been intimidated by the tool. Thanks for keeping it 100, Delita. Absolutely. So it's always good to hear from our friends, and it's good to know that we're not going overboard, because this, like you said, Daryl, this stuff has to be said. So thank you. So Daryl, let's jump in and do the simple namby-pamby one first, and then we'll go to the hype. We'll bring in the big guns. Yeah? So can we do a simple namby-pamby? We're baking a cake for the layman.
Phil, let me take over and drive for just 5-10 minutes.
Go for it.
Just to get it, get the wheelhouse and break the ice between the three of us. So let's put ourselves in a project management scenario. You are my stakeholders. You and Ed are my stakeholders, and I'm your project controller, project scheduler. Now, you brought me here to create a schedule for you guys, and all you said was, Daryl, I want to convert a project server to Oracle. Build me a schedule. Okay, Phil. Okay, Ed. Tell you what. What are the requirements? So you mentioned baking a cake. So let's keep it simple, but keep it in that scenario. As your project scheduler or controller, I'm going to ask you, what are your requirements to this project schedule?
Very good question. That is a question you typically don't give to stakeholders, but I'm going to ask Ed to be the chief stakeholder. Ed, what do you need?
You know, now you got me thinking, because now when you say what my requirements, you're acting like, Daryl, like I gotta show up for you. What I mean by that is, are we talking about resource? Are we talking about equipment, time? So now all of these scenarios is running through my head. So I think the first thing is, and we're baking a cake, right?
Right.
Yep.
Requirement, I would definitely say one of the requirements is we need to have some type of oven, whether a residential type oven or a commercial type oven.
So for all you folks out there, is this going to be a manual Microsoft project type out? And I'm hearing it from my stakeholders, which is Phil and Edward. So please excuse the boringness as far as me typing. I'm not a good typer, but I try to be a good listener. So right now we are making a schedule to bake a cake. Now, starting off the requirements. Now we got to understand the requirements. Yes. So you mentioned oven. So we need an oven. Okay. So I'm going to indent that to put it under the subcategory of the requirements. As far as requirements, what other requirements do we need to start baking this cake?
We're going to need some flour. Because if we're talking about my grandma cake, then we're going to have to really, I can't give out all the ingredients here, but I can, you know, because I like you, Daryl, I'm going to give you a little bit, but I can't give you all of my grandma recipe, okay?
Let's make a simple cake.
Because that pound cake is serious. We're going to need some eggs.
Eggs, okay. Now, let's not get detail as far as large eggs, small eggs, brown eggs. Let's keep it simple.
We're going to need some utensils to put the ingredients in once everything is stored. So if you want to say we're going to need a stirring bowl and then, yeah, that's fine. We can go with that. We got the oven, which is going to cook it. We got the flour, eggs. We got the utensils. You know what, Daryl? When I cook, I like to dress fly. So give me an apron so I can look good so I don't get anything on me so when I can come present. I need an apron, please.
Okay. So
or just some type of cooking wear, clothes.
So it sounds like that may be a indirect cost. That perspective. Okay. Would that be part of the requirements? Or
it would, sir. It would, yes. Yes.
Okay.
It's part of the stakeholder feel good requirements.
Yes.
Right. And gentlemen, we're doing communication. You know, as a project controller or a scheduler, you have to be able to communicate. You have to be able to break the ice. I'm still learning. You know, I still consider myself a student in this game. At the same time, communication is the very aspect pinnacle of doing all this, because if we just do this as a robot, it's not entertaining in that way. So applying these soft skills, hard skills, and asking questions like this, it helps, you know, to get out of the hot seat as a project scheduler or project controller, or even someone using Microsoft Project in that way.
And it's funny you say that, Daryl. I'm glad you're talking about this. I know I'll speed the story up. But basically, when I'm working on a schedule, I talk to people and then ask them, I said, hey, how, you know, one of the questions I said, when you leave your house to go to work, could you walk me through that process? And you'll be surprised how many details people leave out, but that are viable to the journey of leaving your home to the job. So asking those probing questions are always going to be key. And I appreciate you taking time to ask that, because if you don't ask the questions, they're not going to just come out and give it to you, because a lot of times it gets stuck in people's head.
Right. And I know Phil mentioned earlier in the session that project managers have the control. I would counteract that and say project managers do have the empowerment to be able to use specific authority to help push the schedule in a good direction. Of course, it's always in a bad direction. You know, as we all know, project schedules or project management is not easy. You know, if everybody can follow the Pinball guide, we wouldn't be talking about this in regards to how to use Microsoft Project. Am I right, gentlemen?
No, you're right. You're right.
You're very correct. And, you know, unfortunately, we fall into the trap of using the word control. I see that thing.
We stay with them. But go ahead.
we fall into the trap of using the word control. And you're very correct, Daryl. The word control schedule and control cost is presumptuous. When rubber meets road, you ain't controlling nothing. Things are happening and you're doing damage control, you know, at best. The word control is a rather powerful word. You're influencing, you're trying to adjust, but the word control, the same way PMI put control risk under the microscope, we could probably put control anything under the microscope, really. If it was a click of a button that you could control, I mean, wouldn't every project be on schedule and budget? No. So you're very correct. I like the word influence. We got to use a softer word when it comes to these things. Good point, Daryl.
And I hope this will help others out there to not feel intimidated when you're asked to open a Microsoft project and build a schedule, because it is intimidating, Bill and Ed, you know, as what your audience said, it's very intimidating to go down to this type of detail and build a schedule when a lot of people just do Microsoft Excel.
But Daryl, the thing was though, I think it was Danita that said that, Phil and Daryl, where she talked about she didn't know the why. Like, why do I got to do this? Like, why do I got to go deeper? So, that question of why is really a caveat for life. I mean, you know, when you don't know what you're doing, anything to do, Excel sheet to do, you know, anything to do. But when you know the why behind why you're doing this, asking the questions, building the requirements, and holding people accountable, it really opens up the door. It opens up your mind to really building out the schedule. And that's why, I mean, even myself, when I first started, I was intimidated of a Microsoft project because I was like, this is, what is all these things? What is this about? So, but getting back to this, to building out. So oven, flour, eggs, utensils, apron. What else do I need? I need some plates. I don't know if that's the same thing as utensils. So let's say, you know what? I need a carrying something to put it in once the cake is done. You know, like one of those deals. I don't even know what it's called. Once you cook the cake, you put it in, you know, to let it cool down. One of those. Yep. Okay, that'll work. What else we got?
So Ed, I wanted to interject and ask, sure, as far as the requirements, breaking down the requirements. Of course, we have to follow, you know, use guidelines as far as the work breakdown structure and the scope of work. How detailed do you want these requirements projected in this project schedule? All the way down to the one paper plate or one utensil, or do you want to keep it high level?
High level.
Okay.
That's fine.
Now, when we're saying requirements, are we saying the requirements to procure these requirements in that way, or what does requirements mean to you as far as just typing down oven, flour, eggs, and so forth?
Requirements means to me, these are the things that's going to be required to have the success that I need, which is baking a cake. So when I look at requirements, and then I look at what is the main reason why I need these things. And the reason why I need these things, because if I don't have an oven, I mean, I live in Texas and it's hot. Maybe I might have a shot to cook my cake outside, but I need an oven. So that is one of the reasons why I say that's how I view requirements.
So Daryl, you could look at it like procurements, I would say. So those things, you got to have a line item to procure those things, right?
Correct. Yes. And that touches cost, which, as you mentioned, Phil, one of your boxes earlier in the session, you have cost management plan.
Absolutely.
So,
we got a good point. I want you to bake this in at some point, Daryl. Richard said, how is your resource allocation going to be factored in? I think we're talking about that right now, correct? Somewhat?
Yes. Now, resources can be seen as misconstrued, because resources are, of course, people. But we don't really take an account to use materials or travel or the nuts and bolts of materials or resources, but it has to be done in some way in this project schedule if we were to bake a cake, because we do have to touch over those items.
Okay. One of the things too, Daryl, I'm going to give credit where credit is due, because I wasn't even thinking about this, but you're right, Delita. What about the temperature? You know, you need to set the cake at a right, correct temperature. But I also got one for you too. Are we going to put it at the top rack or the bottom rack? Because at the bottom rack is going to cook faster than the top rack. So let's look at, I'll say that, I guess what position of where we're going to put the cake, because that is important. At the bottom is going to cook faster than at the top, and it depends on what you're going for.
Okay. So as far as this whole project schedule in an over a 40,000 foot view,
okay,
how long would this project last? So right now we're starting it today. How long do you think this project will last?
I'll say 48 hours. So maybe, you know, 2 days. I mean, because I've been known to, you know, in making a cake to get everything prepped one day, the next day actually do the baking portion of it. And then the other piece, you know, may be cutting up, you know, or as we're saying, splitting the spoils of, mm-hmm. of what we just done. So that's how I'm looking at it.
Okay. Now, to help start the project, Microsoft Project has a tab called Project. Mm. Now, once we go in there, that's where we can actually officially start the project. And by starting a project, you have to set the project start date. Or you can do backwards planning and use the project finish date. In most cases, the project start date is a very common selection to use. So we're starting it today, August 13th. And then we got a status to schedule. To make sure we can always measure against what was planned and what was performed. Because like I said in the beginning, everything that you put down here is a dollarized value of your work. So it has to count no matter how you hide or slice and dice it. So we're starting the schedule today, which we're statusing it today. Microsoft Project has specific calendars. Right out the box, you have standard, you have night shift, and you have 24 hours. These additional calendars are inserted manually by me. So we're just gonna go over, you use the standard calendar, which is Sunday through Saturday, 7 days a week, 24 hours a day, which that's not realistic. And that's why you have other calendars in here that are more realistic to resources and your duration days on how long the project will take. So for now, we'll just use standard. From there, your project will be officially started by pressing OK. From there, it will annotate or capture the status date or the start of the project. And this is where you can update the project as well. Now, we mentioned about 2 day duration time of baking this cake. Is that correct?
Yes.
Okay. So now that we got over requirements, let's dive into resources and how we want to implement those high level resources to bake a cake. And so I hope it's not going to scare off some people in regards to resource loading and schedule, because that's our kryptonite in regards to project management. You know, resourcing is our kryptonite, and I just wanted to give some light into it that it is a simple. Not simple, but it's a pretty cool, you know, feature to use as far as resources.
It is. And, you know, we won't go into the depth, but let's just say we could make the resources cosmetic, mm-hmm. or we could go into making it resource driven, which is where people just they're already like running to the hills. At the moment you say forget it. You're just going to see smoke. So let's go. Let's go, Daryl.
Okay. So going back to these subtasks or child tasks is what I call it. Do we want to have dependencies between these tasks? And the reason why I ask is because in order to bake a cake, you have to have specific items that you depend on. So if you don't have an oven, you can't cook the flour. Mm-hmm. If you don't have flour, you can't use the eggs and so forth. So as your project controller or scheduler, will these subtasks be dependent upon each other?
I'm going to say yes. I mean, okay. Yes.
Okay. So in order for us to logically link them together or depend on each other is using the predecessor tab, our column. So what we do is use the task ID number to have it dependent on each other. So we'll start off with number 4, which is the flour. Of course, buying an oven, we need to buy an oven. So we use that as a dependency to number 3. So right now we have buying an oven is connected to the flour. So in order to use the flour, we have to buy the oven first before using the flour or even putting flour on the cake itself. Now, as far as the oven, this is where we can get into procurements, but we can keep it high level. We can just put 2 days to buy an oven in regards to stagflation, inflation, shrimpflation, however you call that. So it takes about 2 days for us to buy the oven. We'll start using the flour from there. Is that seem realistic? Now, I want to get to the bottom of this as far as really fine-tuning your task names, because in order for us to have a dynamic schedule, we got to stick to a method of doing and completing, pretty much an action and completing at the same time, or you have to do something and then complete it using it as a milestone. Hope that makes sense.
Yep.
Makes sense, Daryl.
Okay. So we do have to break down these tasks into more subtasks to get that, to tell the story right. So now that we starting off with buying an oven, we can leave it at that high level, but we could insert a task in here, and we can put, let's see, oven procured, and put that as a milestone. Now, a milestone, like what Phil said, is a significant achievement or accomplishment to your project or your schedule in regards to your requirements and your scope. So milestones are very, very important to have in your schedule. So in order to tell the story right, inserting a milestone here after you buy the oven, it will help that dynamic schedule play out.
Hey, Daryl, you mentioned, you know, about milestones. What is the difference between a milestone and a task?
So this is where I'm going to go back to the PMBOK guide and go into chapter 6 of the PMBOK guide. There is a significant difference between a milestone and a task. Mm. And to backtrack, a task is not considered an activity. And I may be slaughtering this wrong, Phil, and hope you can know.
Let me jump in. Let me jump in before
PMI
joins the call.
Yes, please. Please, Phil, please.
Oh, okay. Jokes apart. Ed, please pick up your PMBOK 6, because I know it's right in front of you. Please don't open the 7, the 6. Thank you. Let's go to chapter 6. And actually, you know what, Ed? Let's go to the glossary. So Daryl was going down the path of telling you, in the world of the PMI, tasks and activities, they are used interchangeably. In the glossary, though, you'll find milestones are not the same as tasks or activities. Milestones are zero duration events that signify something has happened. But a task or an activity, which are used interchangeably, I don't really get caught up in the semantics. It has a duration, like buy an oven, 2 days. Oven purchased, that's an event. So can you read what you see in the glossary for milestone?
Absolutely. So milestone, a significant point or event in a project, program, or portfolio.
Thank you, Ed. And can we see what they say about activity or task? Because these are the little things that make people go, where am I? Am I even aligned with what PMI is saying? I just use task and activity interchangeably. Like here in Maxwell Project, it says task name. But in the PMBOK guide, it says define activities. Mm. So they're generally used interchangeably. Task sounds burdensome, though. Yeah, I'm gonna take you to the task. It sounds negative, but task and activity mean the same thing. What do you see, Ed?
So activity, a distinct scheduled portion of work performed during the course of the project.
There you go. Yeah. So that's it. I knew where Daryl was going, and was going in the right direction, but terminology, you know, death by terminology. I didn't want us to go down that road. Oh, back to you, Daryl.
So thank you guys for explaining more between the milestone tasks and activities. Now, I did that on purpose because I wanted to ensure that you always have to know the why. like I've always explained, to keep it simple, you got to know the why. So I'm really happy, you know, Ed asked that question in regards to the differences between the three or the two. So going back to the project schedule, we have a milestone inserted. And what we're doing now is just logically linking the task or the subtasks to build a dynamic schedule. And that's what we're trying to do right now. This is one of the first steps in regards to a project schedule. And this is breaking out of the norm, Phil, in regards to going in here, going to each task, each tab, I mean, and just exploring each feature that Microsoft Project has. It just sets you out of the norm to build the fully built schedule, you know, up front. So meaning that we have a milestone that's, of course, connected to number three. So we got to switch off the flower and switch it off to number four now, because we do have dependencies to buy an oven. Once we buy that oven, it's procured. So we got to close that procurement off as far as like a handoff or a stage gate is what always Phil's always explaining. Now, keep in mind you have these question marks in the duration columns. So don't be intimidated. It's more of a red flag or a eyebrow raise for you to see and find the root cause of why it's causing that question mark. To me, in simpler term, that question mark means your schedule is not realistic in this fashion. So you can't just save it and strike a baseline. You do have triggers in here or alerts that Microsoft has implemented, which is, of course, the question mark. That's more like, it doesn't make sense, guys. If you're trying to build a cake, you're building a cake for 3 days, but you're not taking account to the time, the resources, the materials, and so forth. So that's why these question marks come up. And this is more of a layman's term. And Phil would more have a PMBOK terminology for those question marks. Phil?
So Daryl, I think I really like the way you put that. I mean, with the question mark piece, I mean, it's self-explanatory. Like you said, it's not realistic. And I like that. That's definitely something. And it draws attention when you see the question mark, like why is it there? So you answered that why question again. So thank you.
And not many, I can only speak for myself as being a project controller. One of my bad habits is to overlook these things. Because you're so mixed in with trying to develop that schedule, and you tend to miss these things sometimes. And you may have a 1,000 project line schedule, and you do miss these things at some point. So breaking it down to going back to the flower, what exactly are we doing with the flower? With these requirements, are we trying to procure the flour? Are we trying to get resources? Let me break this down.
Yeah, we'll procure the flour. Or you know what? I could to make it even simpler on you, Daryl. But it's high level, just saying, go buy groceries. Mm-hmm. Buy groceries, which would consist of the flour and the eggs and all the everything there. So once you go buy everything, then we'll be able to navigate into actually the preparation and things of that nature.
Okay.
See, Daryl, man, you're making me think. This is a Sunday. And you got me thinking like this, man. I'm already at work today. So I love this thing we call project management. So this is not work. This is just exercise.
And this is, you know, project controlling, project scheduling 101. You know, just because I had this open, I have the empowerment to control the schedule, but at the same time, my stakeholders are the most important people to tell me what the schedule needs to look like.
Come on, now you're preaching. Come on.
Questioning you, you know, in that fashion will help in regards to building a very realistic and dynamic schedule.
I hope the family, and I'm calling with the audience, the family is really picking up what Daryl is laying down, because it's really some really great information as far as these questions that you need to ask your stakeholders and even yourself that you need to ask, you know. So these are some I'm learning. I can't speak for real, but me, I mean, this is some good stuff here, man. Never mind, I'll let it go. It's some good stuff.
He's knocking it out of the park. He's making me think. Because, you know, to be quite, you know, honest, the typical scheduler is just thinking of like a little chipmunk whacking the things into the tool. And it becomes a mundane, you know, let me just become a, and it's not about the typing. As Daryl pointed out, it's not about typing in tasks. Anyone can type in tasks. You know, a five-year-old these days can type in tasks. But it's the logic that goes behind what you're putting in, which is what Daryl is making us do. He's making us think, first of all, it was very subtle, but I caught it. Daryl asked about a requirement for the schedule. He wasn't even asking about the requirements for the cake. So I saw how he opened it. He started off with a requirement for a schedule. And honestly, in government space, sometimes there is a very firm requirement for the structure of the schedule. Sometimes they have a CWBS, a contract work breakdown structure that your schedule must conform to. So it was a very good opener, Daryl. We didn't really go down that path very much. But here we are talking about the general requirements, which is very important as well. And I think Ed has simplified it by saying buy ingredients, mix ingredients, prep oven, you know, to make it simple. But we needed to go through the thought process of what do you want? Are you saying this is going to drive this? What do you want to do with the flat? These are great questions. We could actually draw this out a lot more, you know, but in the interest of time, because we've gone 10 minutes over, in interest of our viewers, we'll keep it simple. We'll keep it, you know, high level. So, Daryl, let's go for the kill. Let's drive it home. Let's show it.
Okay.
And let's do what Ed, our stakeholder, said, which is putting in some of these higher level tasks. Buy ingredients, mix ingredients, prep oven, bake cake, and let's just show how to weave it all finally together. But the requirements are just priceless, because that drives everything else.
All right, so lost my train of thought, guys, but grocery shopping. All right, so and believe it or not, guys, this is, you know, a project controller environment. This is my everyday life. You know, I go in, talk to stakeholders, talk to people connected to the schedule, and it's basic hands-on. And be like, okay, what do you want from here? Okay, why is this important? How are we going to talk about the risks, the uncertainties, the unknowns, and so forth? So this is basic project scheduling 101 in a reality sense.
Absolutely.
So let's break it down. So we've done the requirements. Now we're doing the planning. Is that what I'm hearing?
Yes.
Yeah, we could say that. We've kind of implicitly done it.
Mm-hmm.
Now, with the help of Delita and our other friends on the call who have asked questions about the color of the cake, tossing us about the color of the cake, the flavor of the cake, everything is going to be planned. Let's assume, for the sake of this illustration, that everything that needed to be planned was planned. Schedule, cost, scope, quality, resources, communications, risk, procurement. We planned it all. So let's just leave it as one line in the interest of time, Daryl. But let's put in the execution now. So this is the doing. So I guess under execution, we could have mix ingredients. And prep oven. And put in the mix. Put mix in the oven. Bake cake.
excuse my typing.
You're good. Bake cake. And yes, in the real world, I know the scheduling police are going to be after us, Daryl. They're going to say, you should have had a recurring task for checking the cake. You don't just leave it in the oven. No. Yeah, so let's assume we did that. Let's assume we know. You're dealing with very experienced schedulers here. Daryl has worked on some monstrous schedules. You know, Ed's worked on monstrous projects. So have I. So we know. Yes, we know. But let's bring this to a close. So let's, for the sake of the purists, let's put check on cake. Let's just put check on cake. Mm-hmm. And let's just say, let's put a milestone, cake baked, so that we can just let people go back to their Sunday. Cake baked, zero. Okay. milestone. There you go. And then the honors, Daryl, of just the dependencies, whatever you think would work for the dependencies, the predecessors and so on. We could just
roll that.
Nice trick.
Now, we still have unrealistic dates, you know, in the schedule.
We're going to let the project controller, project controller, do what you will.
Okay.
Do you ever get that in the real world, Daryl, where they're like, I don't know, you know, what do you, or do you ensure you're getting it from expert judgment, an expert judgment source?
I do both approaches, Phil, mainly because as a project controller, you are the gatekeeper to the schedule. So every time you publish a schedule, it's set in stone by you. And you're representing your sponsor, your stakeholder, your project manager, your program director. You're representing everybody on behalf of the company. Mm. So having a realistic and dynamic schedule is very key to having the empower of a scheduler.
Lovely stuff.
I like that, Daryl.
Okay, right, Daryl, so we still have one of the carts in the station that didn't go with everything else. Or is it because it's a parent? Which planning? So planning mm-hmm. needs to be hooked to something before the agile, schedule police get hold of us. Now the agile police aren't here; just the schedule police. Agile police are finished with us for the day. They're like, these guys crazy. We don't do this stuff. We don't do this stuff. Good luck to them. Little do they know that we are all agilists at the same time. We're shapeshifters. they don't get it. They just don't get it. It's okay.
All right. So for the sake of time, I put two data rations on all the subtasks. And why two? Is because it's more of a realistic sense in regards to taking in consideration between resources, the 80-20 rule, that type of thing. Instead of using one day, you know, it's more common to use at least 2 days, best practices.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Good deal. So we have our execution. Is our execution going to start the day of, or it's contingent on the flour and the plates, isn't it? So how would you handle that one, Daryl?
So as far as the requirements, we do have to have the requirements taken care of. And then, of course, the planning. So I would tie that into the planning side or the planning task.
Good deal.
So Microsoft Project has specific triggers where it won't let you link another task to a task that's already been linked. So planning would need to be worked on as far as...
Oh, planning would be 10. Should we make planning link to 10, the plates? So instead of 13, let's make it a 10. There we go. And then let's link the mix ingredients to 11.
Okay.
There we go. Yep. And I mean, it gets more convoluted. We're just keeping it very high level and simple for those just getting into this world. But this is how you would roll. You know, I think the biggest takeaway from this is to be comfortable as, like Daryl said, the controller. Because the controller, the schedule controller, or the developer, schedule developer, is there to guide the thoughts of the people who know what they want, the stakeholders. In some instances, it's you working with a group of engineers, and they know what they want to do and how they want to do it. It's your job to take what they're saying, to ask them questions about the sensibilities and the flow and the order and the linkages. And that's how it's developed. You see, Daryl, a lot of people, they're scared of even getting into this world because they think it's all on them. And I think you brought up a very good point that it's not all on you. It's really a teamwork, making the dream work. So it's everyone working together. It's not you as a scheduler. You have to know how everything is woven together. You don't.
Mm-hmm. And Phil, to really point out the power, having Microsoft Project seen as a powerful tool, Ed mentioned in the beginning, hey, it's going to take us 2 days to bake a cake. In reality, it's going to take us 27 days to bake a cake, because that's taking into account the requirements, the resources, the planning and execution, you know, that goes along with it.
Absolutely.
Hey, Phil and Daryl, you know, what I learned today and I was, while you guys were talking, was just two quick points. I mean, Daryl really introduced to me the mindset. The mindset of asking the right questions, the mindset of really being that sponsor for your stakeholders and saying, hey, I'm here to support you. And then the other piece is the technical aspects of meaning how to put it together, how you put everything together, just like us building the cake. So those two points to me really stood out in today's opportunity that we were able to do.
Good deal.
Awesome. All right, Phil, I yield the floor to you.
All right. Well, thank you, my esteemed colleagues, Ed, Daryl, for doing this. I think we have made a case for scheduling. It's now very obvious that scheduling is a profession. If people didn't already know, hopefully now they do, that scheduling is a full-blown profession. For this reason, the PMI has certain certifications out there. They have the PMI SP, which is a scheduling professional. And a shout out to my mentor, Mary Hirschner, who, because of her, I'm even having this discussion, because I wasn't really going to go get PMI SP certified, but she challenged me by getting it herself. So PMI has the PMI SP certification, which you can go look at. We also have some great resources available as far as those who want to learn more. I want to encourage you to go on down to the Influence IPM channel. I'm going to put a link in the chat for anyone who cares to go check it out. The Influence IPM channel is Daryl's channel, and he has videos on there and inspiring stuff for scheduling and project controls. We also have a second channel from our friend Ed, which is called the Conscious Agility channel, and I'm just going to drop a link there as well. And I will put that in LinkedIn for those of you on LinkedIn, because I know you can't see it at the moment. And then we also have the Praiseon channel. I'm going to ask you, gentlemen, can you please put your links in there just to make sure, you know, for good measure, that people actually know how they can reach out to you and know more about you. And Daryl gives lessons in Microsoft Project. If you want coaching, mentoring, training in Microsoft Project, maybe you're one of the delinquents that ran away from Microsoft Project School, he's the man. You need to go for training and coaching with him. He'll help you. All right. And then if you're a new project manager or you're an old project manager, I don't mean in terms of age. Come on now. You know what I'm talking about. You've been certified since 2018, 2019. You're an old project manager, whether you like it or not. Maybe you need coaching, training, help. Well, you need to get on to Ed's channel. I want you to subscribe, please. We often say support good music, being a musician, right? But also, let's support great project management content. So I want you to subscribe to Ed's channel. I want you to subscribe to Daryl's channel. And I want you to follow them on social media because they'll be able to help you in your game, inspire you. These guys inspire, motivate, and encourage me, right? Because of Daryl, not only did I write one book on AI, not only did I write a second book. For those who don't know, Daryl is my AI coach. And as a result of him bringing AI to the meetings that Ed and I have with Daryl, he fired me up to go learn more about AI. So I hope we have fired you up, you know, to not only go into the world of scheduling, but also, Ed, do you mind holding up your guides one more time? We want to challenge people. Don't tell me you burnt them, Ed. You know, PMI is watching. Oh, and of course, don't forget, we got Ed's book coming. Ed, you want to talk about your book?
Absolutely. Thank you for this opportunity, Phil and Daryl. The book that's coming is called The Magnetic Project Manager. The purpose of this book is really around communication, being able to present, being able to think outside the box. If you go watch the Conscious Agility channel, I'm in a box, and there's a reason behind, there's a play on it because of the fact that we have to think outside the box. But when we're in the box, can you still operate? Can you still move around? And this book, The Magnetic Project Manager, it really just pulls back the curtains, because a lot of times people don't appreciate what project managers bring to the table. And this is a token to all my new, as Phil mentioned, been in project management for a while. I really wanted to encourage you, when this book comes out, that you pick up a copy of it. I promise you, well, I can't make bold promises like that. I may get in trouble. So I'll just say, if you like what you've seen today, you're really going to get a kick out of what we have here. So again, thank you, Phil and Daryl, for giving me the opportunity to talk about The Magnetic Project Manager.
Thank you, Ed. And thank you for bringing up that book. I would have been mad if I remembered after the fact. Mm-hmm. All right. Well, that's it for today, my friends. If you enjoyed it, don't forget to hit like. Don't forget to follow us. Subscribe. We are going to be back. This is just the beginning. You ain't going to get rid of us that quick. I know I always jab everyone. So the agile zealots, they're like, oh, just shut up and go home. No, we're going to be back. We're going to be back. Look out for us. We're coming. All right. Thank you very much, colleagues. It's all in jest. It's all love. All right. You take care. From me, it's goodbye. And from my colleagues, Daryl, Ed.
Goodbye.
Thank you.
Thank you, guys.
Thank you, guys.
Cheers.